This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 43. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of fast bowling. Ian Pond shares another fast bowling tip with us, and we also answer your questions this week. Well, David, it's hotting up here in Australia. Can you believe it? We had 25 degrees here today, and it's not even the end of winter. So we're really looking forward to a great summer coming up. How's your weather been? More rain to call off any games?
Unfortunately, yes. We had another game called off at the weekend. So due to persistent drizzle, wasn't really that bad, to be honest. But the thing when you play club cricket is that you don't really want to be hanging around in the pavilion all day and all afternoon just because there's a bit of rain around. So we tend to call off games relatively quickly if it looks like it's going to rain. So, which can be a little bit frustrating because, as I was saying last time, as soon as you call the game off, the weather clears up and you could probably have played.
But
the forecast wasn't good and we just decided about 12:30, 1:45, let's not bother. Let's all just go home and do something else instead. So I went to the gym for about 45 minutes instead, and that was quite good. And then spent the rest of the day watching the 2020 finals day here in the UK. So that was good fun, a bit of smashing the ball around and a bit of fun. So that was enjoyable. What have you been doing?
Well, as we have drawn closer to the season, I mean, I've only got about three weeks coming up. Yeah. I've started to assess my sort of my goals for the season, strategizing on what I want to achieve this season.
Mm-hmm.
And before, I had a net session recently, and before the net session, I was sort of targeting about 30 wickets in the season.
Okay, yeah.
Which is quite a lot. I mean, the most I've ever got before was about just under 20.
Okay.
But I feel I've improved a bit, so I started talking to the captain of our team, and he was sort of giving me ideas to sort of achieve my goals, and he said that when things are down, I tend to bowl short a lot.
Right.
So probably about 60% of my balls are short balls, which can't really trouble the batsman.
Okay.
So he's sort of telling me to pitch it up into that corridor of uncertainty or whatever, something that'll trouble the batsman, not that'll let him off the hook.
Okay, yeah.
So David, I was wondering, before your seasons, I know you set goals for yourself, but do you strategize on how you get them?
Yeah, I think that's very important to think about how you're going to get that. I mean, For me, as a wicketkeeper, there's not a lot you can do really in terms of tactics on the pitch. You know, just keep well really is the only thing you can do. But you can put into place things that will allow you to improve your chances of keeping well or batting well or bowling well for that matter. So for example, something as simple as going to the gym, so you've got the fitness levels that you need to make sure that you're less fatigued as the game goes on. And in fact, you can make that another goal. You can say, right, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week or twice a week or whatever it is you decide, and make that another goal for yourself. And that's what I did. You know, I didn't just set myself a target of dismissals, I also set myself a target of number of times going to the gym and how much weight I'm going to lift in the gym, and you know, get my nutrition on point as well, and make sure that all the support stuff, getting enough sleep, that kind of thing, all the support stuff is in place. So when you do walk out there, then you know you're as prepared as you can possibly be in the time that you've got available.
Yeah.
So your tactic is this year what, to improve your accuracy? Then that would be what you were trying to do, or is there certain situations where you bowl less accurately? Like you come back in a second spell and you're more tired, so you don't bowl as well.
I think it's more accuracy and mental sort of concentration as well. Because what my captain told me today, which is really true, that if I get hit, if I get hit for a four or someone takes a two of me, I start to get down and I try to bounce the guy out. So what he's saying is just always stay positive. Forget that ball. Forget the ball that just happened. Think of the next ball,
right,
sort of thing. So
yeah,
always sort of don't worry about the ball that just got hammered, because I tend to put that into the front of my head and I just lose everything from there on.
Mm. So that's interesting. So if you bowl, say, because I think it's different, isn't it, mentally? If you bowl a half volley, say, and you get smashed through the covers for four, then that's in a lot of ways that's fair enough, isn't it? Because you bowled a bad ball and he's put it away. But if you bowl a quite a decent ball and they still manage to score off it in some way, whether it's that they're such a good player that they can hit the ball on the up and they just hit a good length ball back past you, or maybe, you know, you get a nick and it goes through a vacant slip area or something like that. Do you respond differently in those kind of situations?
I think I tend to respond negatively to any run score. I mean, I know I'm a bit of... I tend to like being miserly. So if I get... I'm happy with edges through slip or through fine leg for four or whatever. But if it's hit off the middle, that's when I start to get down. Because then I start doubting myself, thinking, oh, I'm not quick enough for this guy, or I'm not swinging it enough for this guy for him to hit it off the middle.
Right.
So that's what I have to start aiming on this season, to sort of forget all of that and sort of, as you've mentioned before in other shows, control the controllables, like you said. So look at my fitness, look at my gym work, look at my training before that. Whatever happens on the pitch has to happen.
So does that include coming up with strategies for different situations? Or does it just mean having one strategy for all the time and just saying to yourself, right, I'm just going to focus on the next ball? Or are you going to take it sort of a bit further than that and say, I'm not just going to be able to put the last ball out of my mind, but I'm also going to, before I put it out of my mind, I'm going to think to myself, what can I do slightly differently this time to make the change?
Yeah, I think so, because my captain also mentioned something to me today, because another thing I do when I get down on myself is bowl leg side wides. Not massive leg side wides, but sort of bowl on his pads or just off his pads.
Right,
so my captain suggested that when I get down to go around the wicket.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Maybe sort of try and get the angle so the batsman has to play at it and he'll be unsure of the angle coming around the wicket.
Yeah.
And when I tried that in the nets, that sort of worked whenever I got a bit down. So I'll probably try that a bit more and then try it out in games to see if it works.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how that goes, because I think probably as you go through the season, you'll identify different situations where you respond differently, you know. Because, you know, as I say, you would respond. I think anyone would respond differently to being hit on the up compared to being edged through the slips. So I think it's how you deal with that, and not only mentally, but also in terms of your tactic. Changing your tactics or not changing your tactics, depending on whether you need to or not.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's a continuing process, isn't it? Like, I can strategize all I want now, but when the season actually gets underway, situations could be a whole lot different, and I'd need to think in a whole different way, sort of manage the situation. So
that's right.
It's going to be a learning curve.
Yeah, I think that's where the experience comes in. I think the experienced bowler can say to themselves, okay, I know what to do in this situation, and I'm not just going to try the same thing over and over again. I'm going to have the courage of my convictions to try something else.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe the inexperienced bowler, as you say, you kind of resort to something which isn't going to work, like bowling too short.
That's exactly right, David. That's why it's good that we have a few experienced players in our team to sort of put us in line, us younger guys in line. So when we go off, sort of start bowling short, they come and sort of pat you on the back and say, get back on track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's good to have someone who you can just turn to and go, what do you think? What's going on here? If you get a bit confused, get a bit of clarity in your mind, because a clear mind is the key thing, really, isn't it? No matter what you decide, no matter what your tactic is, no matter what your field is, you have to have a clear mind as you're running in with that one thing, whatever that one thing is in your head. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes. You'll have to keep us posted on that.
Yeah, sure will. Hope it'll be a good season. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week. And this week's theme is fast bowling. And as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on Pitch Vision in the How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy.
That's right, Kevin. And we're very lucky this week because we have Ian Pont on the line, the fast bowling guru, to answer some of your questions. Welcome, Ian. Let's start with a question from an anonymous emailer.
Okay.
He or she says, I've heard that if you slide your back foot along the ground, it can make you bowl quicker and more accurately. Should I start to do this in my action?
Right, okay. Well, all of the great fast bowlers tend to drag their back foot rather than slide them. I think the anonymous email probably means, you know, should I drag my back foot? The benefit of keeping your back foot on the ground is that you can transfer your energy a lot more cleanly from back foot to front foot impact.
Mm-hmm.
If your back foot lifts off the ground, that's what spinners actually do.
Mm.
And if you try and push a wall over and you're standing with your feet in the bowling position, if you lift your back foot off the ground and push against the wall, you'll be able to push yourself backwards because there's no support behind behind you.
Mm.
So by it dragging the back foot and engaging your back foot, as it were, as you move forwards, this can help increase the speed because it uses the hips, the core of the body, to drive towards the target. So it's that twisting, driving movement from the core of the body that helps to increase speed. And you do that by keeping your foot engaged with the ground. Now, clearly, if you've got a delivery stride, you can't leave one foot one side of the crease and land your front foot the other and bowl because you'll look like a set of step ladders.
Yeah.
So what you'll have to do is you'll have to slide or drag your back foot. And then on release of the cricket ball, you're looking for both of the knees to be level. If you were looking from sideways on,
mm-hmm.
both your knees would be level. I don't want to complicate the issue, but basically, if your hips are facing the target, in other words, they're front on to the batsman when you release the ball, then
right.
you've probably engaged your hip, which means you've dragged your foot.
This is from Sridhar. And Sridhar says, hi, I'm a 21-year-old right-arm medium pacer. My bowling action is wrong-footed, i.e. I deliver the ball at the point of landing the left foot, or sometimes even before landing the left foot. Some say that this is the reason that I'm not getting pace. Please help me correct my bowling action.
Well, it's very hard to correct the base when the base is that far out of time. You know, we call it bowling off the wrong foot, but it actually isn't, is it? Because you're still bowling off the correct foot. It's just as was pointed out there that you're bowling before the front foot has actually landed fully.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually comes from throwing both your bowling hands your non-bowling hand and your bowling hand forward at the same mm-hmm. time. And therefore you create almost a hop in your bowling action. And it's just, it's a sequencing issue. It's a timing issue. The way to change that, if you wanted to change it, would be to walk through your bowling action and then jog through the bowling action and then run through the bowling action. Because when you walk through initially, you won't hop because you've got no ground speed. You have to step like everybody else does. And if you drill that enough times and reverse chain it or build it backwards from the crease, you can then get to a point where it starts to break down. And that is really where the action disintegrates. So you'll need to work from the crease backwards, build it backwards, and eventually get used to doing it. But it's just a sequencing issue. It can be corrected. The bad news is that it does take quite a long time. But if people are prepared to change it, what they'll find is they can bowl properly from a front foot impact and be able to drive against that foot. So it is worth doing.
If you see a bowler who's bowling on the wrong foot, should you think, I must change that? Or is that something where you have to evaluate it depending on how they're bowling? Because, of course, Mike Proctor didn't have many problems, did he? And he bowled off the wrong foot.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Chris Cairns' father, Lance Cairns, you know, he hopped. Max Walker, who played for Australia in the 70s, he hopped a bit. The problem slightly is, David, there aren't many examples of world-class players who bowl like that. I think, is it Tanvir, the Pakistani bowler, does it a little bit, the left-armer. You know, so there are bowlers around, but they tend not to be very high-profile bowlers because that style of bowling is incredibly difficult to get a lot of pace from. You picked out Mike Proctor. He probably bowled the best part of 90 miles an hour. Massive in-swing was very devastating. And, you know, would you change someone who's already an international player? Probably not, because the sequence change would have to be so dramatic for them that they'd probably lose the assets they'd gained by bowling mm-hmm. like that. If someone is a youngster, 11, 12, 13, you know, or they have a will to change and they want to change it, then it's absolutely worth doing the work. But as with all these things, you know, sometimes as a coach, you've got to work out whether by not intervening is actually better in the long run than saying something that's going to be a bit of a headache and not an aspirin, if you see what I mean. So if somebody's performing well with a nutty style action, you know, hey, who are we to say that you should change it?
So you look at it really on how they're performing. You don't sort of take one look in the nets and go, right, let's sort this guy out. You evaluate it over a longer period.
Yeah, I mean, if they're bowling wides into the side netting, it really depends what their outcome is, I guess. Mm. If someone is rushing in and bowling absolute gas and knocking the off stump out every ball, why would you want to change the outcome? Mm. I mean, usually you change the process, which is the action, to get better results. We're judged on results. We're not judged on what our action looks like. But we're trying to create consistency, speed, accuracy, all of those things, and some movement. And if by changing the base, which will be the little hop in the action or the wrong foot, if by changing that we can create more ticks in those boxes, then it's worth changing. But all I'm saying is it really does depend on the age of the player and whether they have a will and a desire to make those changes, because the player has to buy into that. You can't just say that's wrong and bin it if the guy's doing incredibly well. So I think you have to be sensible as a coach sometimes. If they're very young, you can then say, yes, of course, let's try and do it this way.
In a recent article on pitchvision.com, Tom Matcham wrote that bowling fast is all about the feet and the legs at the crease. He says that if you imagine that the cricket field is a scale, your back foot landing should make the reading on the scale as small as possible. On the other hand, the front leg must be as straight as possible. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, let me deal with the second part first. I believe that if your front leg is straight and locked, that is useful because that acts as a blocking force, which you can then drive against with your hips. And without getting overly technical, you've got rotational forces and linear forces, straight line forces, working in the bowling action. And you're trying to create leverage. We'll all understand a catapult. If you pull a catapult back, the further you pull it, the more it fires. And the bottom of that catapult, when you hold it, is solid because you're holding it straight. If the bottom of that catapult was all floppy, when you pulled the thing back, it wouldn't fire particularly well. So let's substitute the bottom of the catapult for your leg. If your leg's all bendy and floppy, clearly that doesn't help you with trying to create some force out of the crease. So a straight front leg, if you can achieve it, is probably an ideal scenario. From the back foot impact point of view, there are sideways bowlers who spend a good deal more time on their back leg than, let's say, a front-on bowler whose foot points straight down the pitch. So you will have some bowlers who spend time on their back leg, other bowlers who get off their back leg very quickly. Dale Steyn being an example, he has incredibly fast feet through the crease. That doesn't make him a fast bowler because there are other factors at play here. And there are other people like Shoaib Akhtar who spends probably 6 to 10 frames longer on camera on the back foot than Dale Steyn, but bowls the same speed because he creates what's called a stretch reflex, a big arm pull. So the correlation between back foot time spent and front foot impact does depend on what style of bowler you are and what muscle groups you're engaging. But the principle is, if you're transferring energy from back to front foot, that's desirable, and that's possibly what that article is about.
Following on from that, in the comments on that article, and I'll put a link in the notes to that article, so if you're listening to this, you can get that. But following on from that, there was a discussion about quick bowlers who have a bent front leg. That seems to be defying that particular law of physics, is it?
Well, it's desirable to have a locked front leg if you can. I mean, if you haven't got one, it doesn't mean you can't bowl fast. I mean, it's like saying, you know, a 5-liter engine's quicker than a 3-liter engine, but it doesn't mean the 3-liter engine, for example, doesn't go as fast. There are lots of examples of people with what I call slightly eased off front legs, slightly flexed front legs.
Right.
One of the best examples probably was Andy Bickle of Australia. And I spoke to Andy about this, actually, because he was at Essex for a while. And he said, I've always bowled with a bent front leg. I've always eased that front leg off. What you're trying to avoid is a front leg collapse, because that's a different issue where the weight just drops down into the ground. But if the leg is slightly flexed, I mean, I think that's okay. At some stage, a bowler may then extend the front leg into a straight position As they come out of the crease, some people stay with a bent front leg all the way through. It doesn't mean they can't bowl fast, but if your leg is locked and you're creating like a pole vault sort of style leg at the front, you can then catapult over that and your energy then moves through to target a lot more easily than if your leg is slightly eased off and bent. So, you know, you're not getting that firepower against the left-hand side if you're a right-arm bowler. And that's what we're looking for. I mean, I do a lot of coaching, as you know, David, with fast bowlers, youngsters. And if they have a bent front leg, I say to them, look, try and lock your front leg if possible and see how you feel. The issue, again, for a lot of players is they can't bowl like that. It doesn't feel right. Comfortable and they don't want to do it. That's also fine. But pound for pound, straight leg against a bent leg, the straight leg should always increase the speed a little bit once you get the hang of the timing.
Thanks, Ian, for coming on the show and answering those questions for us. And I think it's back over to Kevin for one final question.
All right, David. Well, our final question is from another David, and he says, You mentioned in your last podcast that Kevin's sore knee, that's my sore knee, may be down to something going on up in the kinetic chain. I was wondering if for fast bowlers, as opposed to wicket keepers, there are any specific exercises that should be concentrated on in order to strengthen the front left leg, which takes about 3 to 9 times your body weight, depending on who you listen to, of course. And then he says, I'm thinking that the front leg needs to be much stronger than the right leg that is dragged behind, that is ironically out of balance. So more emphasis on, say, deadlifts for the left leg and hip lifts rather than the left leg squats. That may only strengthen the front of the leg rather than the back of the leg and the buttocks. Any thoughts on this one? I'll take what you say with your standard disclaimer. Would be most welcome. Now, David, personally, when I used to have all my knee problems, especially in my front knee, when I strengthened it, I tended to do it equally. So not just work on my front knee, but I tend to do it on my right knee as well to sort of keep it balanced because I don't want my front knee exceedingly stronger than my right knee. What would you say to that, David?
Yeah, you're going along the right lines there, but I would go even further down that line. So let's assume that you're a right arm over bowler.
Yeah.
Your left leg will automatically be stronger than your right leg because it has to be because of the load that you're putting on it. So it's adapting to the circumstance that you're putting it under. So although it's under more stress, it's also going to be stronger.
Yeah.
So to try and make it even stronger, all that'll do is increase the imbalance in the strength between your left and your right legs and your left and your right hips.
Yeah.
And as we talked about before, the wider the imbalance between the left and the right side of the body, or for that matter, the wider the imbalance between the front and the back of the body, the higher the chance of injury.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. You do have to be balanced in your training. But in order to be balanced in your training, you probably have to train your right side more than your left side to make up for the difference.
Yeah.
So you have to bring up the weaker area, in other words, so it's as close as possible to the stronger area. So how do you do that? Well, it varies depending on the time of year and what your goal is and how bad the difference is between the left and the right side, because with some people, you test them and there's hardly any difference between left and right side. There's always going to be some, but if the difference is low, then you don't really have to worry about it as much as someone with a very, very big difference in left and right, say, hip flexibility.
Yeah.
So what you'd do is you'd have some sort of combination of different types of training. Yes, you would do the double limb stuff. So you would do the stuff with the, you know, with bench pressing and squats and deadlifts and all those kind of things. You do those with high weights and lower reps. But you'd also do unilateral training where the right leg and the left leg are trained separately from each other. So things like single leg squats, stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you have a big difference between left and right or front and back, then you can train the weaker side up to 3 times as much as the stronger side. And say, for example, if your posterior train, that's your lower body, the the muscles on the backs of your legs and your back, if those muscles are weaker than the front muscles, then you would do three times more pulling type exercises, deadlift type exercises, than you would pushing exercises, i.e. squat type exercises. And that could be, and that also is not just for strength, it's also for mobility and flexibility. So if there's a big difference in mobility between your left and your right hand side, or your front and your back, not so much with the front and the back, but certainly with the left and the right, then you would have to look at doing more mobility on the weaker side than you would on the stronger side. So that's an interesting question.
There'll be lots of theories on that as well, because I've in different sports, like not just cricket, baseball, I've heard people say that you only need to sort of strengthen one side, but as you say, balance is really important. But they say you only need your right arm, so you'd have to have your right arm stronger. It's sort of a wake-up call, isn't it, David?
Definitely. You can't be too specific. You've got to use training. A lot of times you've got to use training to redress the imbalances that your sport causes.
Yeah.
So rather than thinking of training as a way of increasing your performance by making the strong bits already stronger, you think of it more as a way of preventing injury by bringing the weaker bits up to the stronger bits.
Well, as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on Pitch Vision for any more fast bowling tips on the How to Bowl Faster coaching course by Ian Pond on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. And stay tuned for our next show on the 28th of August, with the theme being Strategic Captaincy. And so if you have any questions on strategy, captaincy, or anything else, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you next time. Signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampa.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.